My name is Jake Ridlin. I'm 22 years old. Today's 11/22 or Thanksgiving 2018. I'm speaking with Harry Talley, who is my pup, and we're recording this interview in Bear, Delaware. Now, pup, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
That's a lot of years ago. I had a good childhood. I grew up shortly after the Depression, the after years of the Depression. I was born in 1935. I was an only child until I was 6 years old, and then had a brother. I did grow up during the Second World War. Life was very different then, in that our life changed considerably, having to do without a lot of things, having to conserve an awful lot. Mm-hmm. You were only allocated so much fuel, for example, to heat your home. And back then we had coal furnaces. My grandfather was an engineer on the railroad. He taught my father how to stoke a heater so that we could conserve all the coal that we could. We were also limited on what we could buy in the way of certain foods that were rationed. I used to go to the store with my mother and watch her very carefully purchase with coupons to give us the proper nourishment that we needed, and to still leave enough coupons to have enough to buy later on. She really managed a home like I don't know what. I lived in a neighborhood where there were a number of children. We had a lot of good times together. It was in the city of Wilmington, Delaware, and I had a lot of good friends that I shared life with. One day my parents decided to buy another home outside of Wilmington, and I was very unhappy over that because that meant I was going to have to leave my friends. We were a close-knit family. My parents both were very religious, very active in the church. As a result of that, I grew up in the same church with them. We had a lot of strict rules back in those days as to what you could do in the church and what you couldn't do. Might as well say it was rather old-fashioned compared to what life is today. In the new neighborhood that I moved to, which I grew to accept, I then again became associated with a lot of childhood friends. Still keeping a lot of the friendships that I had in our first home. We had a lot of good times together. I guess the most mischief that we ever got into was on mischief night before Halloween. Where we would play tricks on the neighbors and had a lot of fun doing it. We had one neighbor who was very contrary and didn't like children very much. And in our neighborhood, second neighborhood, we had two age groups, and the older age group came to us, the younger, the day before mischief night and asked us to make a lot of noise out in front of this man's home And in his backyard, this again was during the war, he had a victory garden with a little white picket fence around it. The victory garden was, people back then grew a lot of their vegetables just because of the shortage in the stores. And we made a lot of the noise out there, and they commenced to move his fence to 3 yards away. And after that, he didn't bother us anymore. He grew to accept us.
That actually goes towards one of my questions I was going to ask you later.
It's funny, right now I've been in contact with one of my childhood friends at the first home. He lives out in Idaho. And we've been reminiscing over a lot of things that went on as we were young people. It's been a real lot of fun doing that, but...
How long was it between you talking to him when you were a kid and now?
I had not seen him since we were... the last time I saw him was at the University of Delaware. When I was a freshman, I was walking on campus, and he came up to me and made himself known. And as I say, we hadn't seen one another then since I moved from the first home, which was when I was about 10 years old, I guess, 10 or 11. And we've had a good relationship now via email. We have good times sending one another different things that are going on, and we've really had a great time doing it.
Do you think you'll ever see him in person?
I haven't seen him in person since the university.
Do you think he will?
No.
No?
No, because his wife is in bad health, and they don't travel anymore, and of course we don't travel anymore. I wish I'd have known when we were out west, after we retired 20 years ago, we went out west. I wish I'd have known where he was then, because we were not far from where he lives. I could have seen him then.
Real close by to where you guys were going.
But those things happen.
Now, a few of these questions are going to be about your childhood. The next one I was going to ask you was to tell me about a teacher or other adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up.
When I was in elementary school, my first grade teacher, all of the kids in the class, we absolutely loved her. She had a certain way of endearing herself to us and conveying education and making education interesting. And at the end of our first grade, we asked if we could have her for our second grade teacher, and she turned out to be our teacher through third grade.
No way.
She was...
Did you guys hear that?
She was a marvelous lady, Mrs. Wicks. We loved her, really loved her to death. And she made learning fun. We got a lot of... I would say that... she really had of all the teachers I ever had, she had the greatest impact on my life.
And that was in Wilmington?
In Wilmington, Delaware, yeah.
Do you remember the school's name?
Harlan School, Harlan Elementary.
Is it still there?
Yep.
Now, my third question would be, what advice you would give to your younger teenage self?
Say that again.
If you had any advice to give your younger teenage self, now that you're older, what would you tell your younger teenage self if you had any advice? A little bit of a tough one.
That's difficult.
Do you want me to go back to it? We can think about it more.
I don't know that I would ever change the life that I had as a young person. I don't know that I had so many things in a positive nature happen when I was growing up, and family association, which was very, very important to me. I think it would almost be reversed of what I would, based on my childhood experience, what advice I would give to young people today of what they're missing in contrast to what I had as a child.
So you would say a lot of the happiness came from not the fact that obviously you guys were going through tough times growing up, so, but you were still able to live a happy life, so happiness really came from, like you said, the family and friends
It was family association. Back then, family was a vital aspect of life. Everything that it evolved, I mean, everything that went on really had to do with family influence. I mean, not just doing it family itself, but everything that you did evolved around the influence that family had on you when as growing up.
Yeah.
My grandfather, my mother's father, whom I'm named for, he never had any boys, and I was my mother's firstborn, and she asked him if she could give me his name, and he fell in love with that idea. And he and I were very close. My dad worked very long hours to take care of his family. And Friday nights were family nights, and Sundays were family days. But I spent a lot of time with my granddad, both in Wilmington and at Fenwick Island in Delaware. He built one of the first cottages there. And I used to spend a lot of time with just he and I down there, the two of us.
Down at Fenwick.
We had a great relationship. And I used to help him do things. I helped him paint his house and helped him paint it, the cottage. And as I say, it was just great times.
If you had to describe him, how would you describe him?
Hmm?
If you had to describe him, how would you describe him?
He was a very dynamic man. He was an engineer on the Pennsylvania Railroad. And a very strong-willed man. And he, back in 1927, was an engineer on a very famous train run from Washington to New York. The Lindbergh train special. Charles Lindbergh was honored in Washington, and he was chosen for this train run to get films taken in Washington to New York. And the films were developed on the boxcar that the film company had hired from the railroad. And he was a real good influence on me. He taught me a lot of things that my dad didn't have time to do because he worked so hard. And he taught me an awful lot how to do things with my hands. And we just had a great relationship. And as I say, he never had a son, so I was his answer to a son, and he was very tough. He was a disciplinarian. He made me toe the line, but I didn't mind that.
Now, what did your dad do most of your life? You say he worked a lot?
My dad was in the life insurance business, but he and my mother got married. He was secretary to the sale agency sales manager for the company he went with, and then he got his sales license and also did life insurance sales while being the secretary, and eventually became a district manager of sales in Wilmington, Delaware. And eventually after that, he became agency manager, like the man he first worked for as a secretary. And he had a chance to go to New York with the home office. And the man that he first worked for was then a senior vice president of the company. And he called my father in and asked my dad if he wanted to live a lot of good years after retirement. And my dad said yes. And he said, "We'll stay in Wilmington and add 10 years to your life," which he did. But he was very active in Lions Club work with the Wilmington Lions Club. And then also he was very active with the Easter Seal Society. He was state president of the Easter Seals for a number of years. And he was terribly active in Boy Scouting. He was the oldest living active Boy Scout when he died. He loved scouting. He was a scout when he was a young boy, and his scoutmaster was a full-blooded Indian. He had to quit school to take his father down south for health reasons and to help earn money to care for his father. And then when everything got straight with him, they came back to Wilmington. And then he went back to school and got his high school degree and then went on to business school and studied accounting and secretarial.
Do you know where the business school was?
It was Beacom College in Wilmington, which became Goldie Beacom College.
Mm-hmm. I have a few friends that go there.
And it was located on 10th and Jefferson Street in Wilmington. And was a straight A student there.
Now, when you were a kid, did you ever have a nickname growing up?
Andy Boy.
Andy Boy. Was there a reason for that?
That was given to me by my grandfather.
Did your friends call you Andy Boy too?
No, they just called me Andy.
Just Andy.
But when he built his cottage down to Fenwick, he had a rowboat built by a man that lived down there, did a boat building, and he named it Andy Boy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's really cool. Now you're talking about...
Oh, wait a minute. I did have another nickname by a neighbor who was with the Wilmington Morning News in advertising. He named me Champ because when I was born, I was the heaviest baby in the hospital. I weighed 10 pounds.
Jeez, more than all three of us.
That was my other nickname was Champ. He called me Champ.
Now you're talking about your father and grandfather working. Tell me one of your favorite work stories.
Favorite work stories?
It could be good or bad, just any favorite, anything that stands out to you.
What, my work or?
Your work, yeah.
My favorite work story, I guess is later in life when I went into the engineering surveying business. Eventually, the drawbridge going into Rehoboth, Delaware was found to be unsafe. And the State Transportation Department of Delaware hired a engineering firm in New York, Hardesty and Hanover, to do a design for a new drawbridge. And they hired the company that I work for to do all their local surveying work. And I was put in charge of all that. And to me, that was the height of anything I ever accomplished. Nothing could be done until I passed on how the layout was. and they had to build a temporary bridge over the Rehoboth-Lewis Canal before they could take out the drawbridge to allow transportation in and out of Rehoboth. And so, as I say, I was involved from the very beginning of design. We had to do a lot of field work for the engineering company so they knew what they had to work with for their design, and then I was right there when they were doing all the construction. And I think the greatest moment was when they raised the bridge. They had to do it by hand cranking, and then they had to lower the bridge by cranking it down. And when that bridge fell in place perfect, as it had to, we all jumped up with glee.
Yeah.
That was the highlight. So I would say that was my...
How long was the whole process?
Golly.
From beginning of planning it out,
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah. That was... There was other highlights in my life of my work, but that was the most satisfying. And personal rewarding.
Now, when it comes to your personal and professional life, or you can pick one, what are you the most proudest of? That's even a tougher question.
Well, when I started out in life to work, I worked with my dad in the insurance business. After I got into it, I really wasn't that satisfied with it. And back in 1966, I guess it was, I got active in politics. And in 1968, I was asked to be on a campaign staff for the ultimately Governor Peterson's campaign. And after he was elected to governor of the state of Delaware, I was asked to be the research director for the Republican State Party. And this was in January of 69. Well, it turned out that there was a Whitey Michaels was his nickname. He was a prothonotary of Newcastle County, which is the clerk of the Superior Court in Newcastle County. And he agreed to run for that office if Nixon was elected president, they would work some way to get him appointed U.S. Marshal for the state of Delaware. So, turns out that's what happened. He was appointed that. And then Governor Peterson appointed me prothonotary of Newcastle County for the duration of his term. Well, during the course of my work with the office, and I made a lot of changes in it, there was a lot of waste going on and a lot of insecurity of files and so on. And the Superior Court judges came to me. There was a course out in Aspen, Colorado through the University of Colorado Law School of the First Court Administration Institute to be held there. And they said that they would like me to go to it. And if everything went right there and I finished my work satisfactorily, they wanted me to become the first court administrator of the Delaware Supreme Court, or Superior Court. So I agreed to it and went to Aspen, Colorado for a summer. And became the first court administrator in January of 71. And that was to me quite an accomplishment. Because my studies had always been in accounting, not in law, having anything to do with law.
Yeah.
And actuality, the work that I was doing as prothonotary and as administrator, I didn't have to be a lawyer. They needed somebody that could handle administration of records for them, to take that off their back so they could do more work in the judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved that work. And
this was in Colorado? Or was this in Delaware?
No, the institute, the course that I was in, the first institute course, was in Colorado. And it was in Snowmass at Aspen. And then I came back home. And then that's when I was appointed the court administrator for Delaware in the whole state. And then in 1972, I resigned. My marriage broke up. I was not in a position to mentally at that time to continue on. So I resigned from that position in January of 72 and moved to Sussex County, Delaware. But that was, to me, that was a real accomplishment, not having any preparation for anything like that, and then to be recognized for the work I had done.
Yeah.
It meant a lot.
That's crazy how it wasn't even in your field of studies. That's mind-blowing. Now, we're going to switch the focus onto mom for the next two questions. So, what was my mother like when she was growing up? Do you have any favorite stories about her?
Hmm. I first knew your mom when she was 9. Your mom was very apprehensive at first of my relationship with her mother. And rightfully so, because she had lost a father that she never knew, and it was taken from her. And she was not sure of her security with my coming on the scene. But as time went on, that worked out and everything was fine. My favorite story of your mother is that I had on her door to her bedroom disaster area. That was always my joke with her. Most of the things with your mom and her growing up was like all of our family has been since then, is that our life evolved around her activities and what she was doing with her life in school, and following her in her band activity with the Sussex Central Junior Band. And she became head majorette. And then she got into indoor competition. We just spent a lot of time active with her life.
Did she do anything else besides the marching band?
She did cheerleading. Was it? With a wrestling team.
Yeah?
And then she was Little Miss Georgetown.
No.
She won a TV.
Georgetown, not Little.
It's Miss Georgetown. Or Miss Georgetown, that's right.
Oh, not Little Georgetown.
Yeah, that's right. She won it with twirling the baton. She could twirl a fantastic baton.
Now, what was the, was the worst thing you remember about my mom when she was growing up?
She wrote the book on excuses. I would say.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any specific situation?
No, she just had an excuse for everything. That's why I say she wrote the book on it.
Now, this one's more of a general question, but what was one of the most happiest memories that you have of your life?
Spring of 1974. I met your mom. And we had our first date in July of 74.
Tell me about that.
We went to dinner at Fran O'Brien's in Rehoboth Beach. And we dated until our marriage in August of 79. I asked her to marry me at Christmas of 78, and it took her 7 forever to say yes. And I thought to myself, she better say yes, because I don't have any other Christmas present for her. And she did say yes. But that's the most wonderful thing in my life.
Did you guys go on a honeymoon?
Went to Florida.
Where in Florida? Miami?
Miami Beach. Wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, where'd you guys get married?
In Georgetown, St. Paul's Episcopal Church.
Was that the same church that Mom got married in?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Is the church still around today? Yeah.
Yep. And that's where we'll be interred.
Now, one of my last questions would be, I know we're just talking about my mom, but share a favorite story that you have, either about her or with her or both.
Well, we used to, we had a lot of good times vacationing in Ocean City, New Jersey, at a place my parents rented. And then we wound up going to Myrtle Beach and visiting down there with members of her family. Two of her sisters had gone there for quite some time. But I think when we retired, and my mom retired the year before I did, so she could condition herself to my being home all the time. And when I retired the next year, in March of 2000, that summer we took a trip out west. We had always wanted to travel and see some of the country. And I think that that time, having a chance to fulfill a dream was one of the neatest experiences we ever had, to the point where 10 years later we went back out again to try to see some things we hadn't seen the first time.
Did you guys take the same route, or did you guys visit more states or different things in different states?
Different things, pretty much.
Do you know how many states you drove through?
I haven't counted at one time. We got into a mess of them.
How long was the trip?
13 days, wasn't it?
37,000 miles?
7,600 miles of car driving. We drove the whole thing in a rented car. But it was something else, that first trip.
We also met to
that I think that stands out in her mind the most.
Yeah. Is there anything else after retirement that you found to be one of the coolest things that you've ever done?
Well, the two trips.
Did you get to do anything else that you really wanted to growing up?
We went to Hawaii. Hmm. Went to Hawaii.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah. In January or February of
68. 88.
I mean 88. I always say 68 for some reason. Yeah. We went to Hawaii with a group from Georgetown, Delaware, for 10 days, I think. 14
days.
And Norma's one sister, Dorothy, she was in the group, and we had a really fantastic time over there. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. That was a real interesting experience. It's quite a plane ride. There was a lot of going on the airplane going there, but then everything got quiet for the last hour. Nothing was going on. And that was the longest hour of flight I've ever experienced in my life. But we had some good time over there. There was an agency over there that the thing was planned through, and we had a meeting in the very beginning of different stuff we could do that we could pick, you know, to do. And we got a chance to go to the Big Island, Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that was where they had the largest ranch owned by one family in the country. And we went up to the big volcano area where all the real lava is still showing, no vegetation at all. And we decided to take some pieces of lava and bring them home. Then we heard a lot of talk about it's bad luck if you take the Hawaii lava home with you, so we mailed it back.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Now, I guess one of the questions that's not on here, but I guess I wanted to ask would be, because I'm interested in sports, what were your favorite sports teams to watch growing up?
My favorite sports?
Favorite sports and favorite sports teams.
My favorite would be football and baseball. I was a manager of the football team in high school.
Did you play either of
no,
the two?
Okay. I was too skinny. The coach told me he was afraid I'd get crumbled up in my bones. I weighed, I think, about 121 pounds, and I was 6 foot. So I was a little skinny. And he wouldn't let me play. I said, well, if you won't let me play, can I be your manager? Yep. And this was 10th grade, and there were two fellas ahead of me that were graduating my freshman year. So I got to be the manager for my junior and senior year. And one of the fellas that was manager married one of your mom's classmates.
Oh yeah?
Mm-hmm. And so my interest in football was ever since I can remember. When I was, there was a Pièce de Pont where I first lived was right within the block of Pièce de Pont High School in Wilmington. And my dad would take me to all their football games from the time I can remember. And so that's why I have such a liking for football. Well, we also had a Philadelphia Phillies farm team, the Wilmington Blue Rocks. And every season, Dad had a box, and a friend of his, they had this box where we could go and watch all the games we wanted to watch. So as far as favorite teams, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Philadelphia Phillies have always been my favorite. When I was little, we would listen to all the Philadelphia Eagles games on the radio. We didn't have TV back then. We didn't have TV until 1949. And we just sit there in the living room and listen to the games that way, the same with baseball. It was all on radio.
And then when television came out, were the games always on TV?
No.
No?
No, it was a while before the games got on TV, as well as football. Eventually, they did. I remember the game. The Philadelphia Eagles played the New York Giants, and what's that girl's name on Frank Gifford? When he was hit in a play that did him in for the rest of his life as a New York Giants, the Philadelphia Eagles hit him so hard.
Really?
Trying to jar the ball.
Yeah.
And Chuck Benarek was the Eagle that hit him. And that was the first game I remember on TV. I saw it that day that it happened. Wilmington Blue Rocks is still a team in Wilmington, but in a different location.
Oh, it's not the same stadium that I've been to?
The first Wilmington Blue Rocks Stadium was at 30th and Governor Prince Boulevard in Wilmington. That's where they used to have the Barnum and Bailey circuses also. And the University of Delaware used to play some of their football games there.
So University of Delaware didn't have a stadium back then, or?
I don't know why they came up to Wilmington for some of their games. The stadium they had originally at Delaware was a very tiny little thing.
Yeah.
Not the extravagant setup that they have now. And some of my favorite players that I used to watch in high school went to Delaware to play for Delaware.
Now, I guess there's only 3 more minutes left of this interview, so one last question that I could ask is if there's anything that you still want to do with your life that...
Make your mom well and happy.
Yeah. Well, I think you already did that. I think you're doing I think you're doing that.
That's my biggest dream.
All right. Well, I guess we can stop it there. There's 2 minutes left, but I really appreciate you taking the time out to answer some of the questions.
Glad to do it, son.
Yeah. There we go.
I forgot you had to time it for 40 minutes.
Huh?
I forgot he was timing it for 40 minutes.